Hi, this is Carla Allen, host of School Counseling Opportunities and Professional Engagement, also known as SCOPE. I am a professional school counselor, currently a coordinator of counseling services for my school division and adjunct professor for counselor education at a local university, Virginia Commonwealth. Go Rams! We will be discussing topics relevant to current trends in school counseling and ideas on how to provide support to one another. For questions, comments, or discussion topics, email me at vscaprofdevelopment@gmail.com. Again, that's vscaprofdevelopment@gmail.com. Welcome to SCOPE.
School Counselor Opportunity and Professional Engagement SCOPE.
From the third floor.
Advocacy is a word that is used over and over in the counseling field. I don't know of many other jobs that professionals must constantly advocate to do the jobs for which they are trained. Brett Welch runs the VSCA Committee for Government Relations and Advocacy. Let's hear what she has to say about how we can become even better advocates for our roles at the local, regional, and state level. And she has brought us a surprise guest. Welcome to the third floor.
Hello.
Glad to have you here today. Brett, you are part of the VSCA team, so tell us a little bit about what your role is.
Sure. So I am the Advocacy and Government Relations Chair for VSCA. Mm-hmm. It's been a long journey on the board. I think I've been on 7 years.
Wow.
I know.
You've been on there a long time.
I have, and done everything from membership to, I think I started elementary VP, which we had at the time.
Right.
And president, and back to technology, I think, and now landed in advocacy and government relations,
right,
which I
and
really
you
like.
Just rotated off the board again, right? Weren't you on the board?
I did. And so, right. So now how the board works, I was on the board, and when you rotate off, you can get into committee work. So
right.
Now I'm the committee chair.
So welcome to committees.
Thank you.
So
I love
glad to have you here. So your committee is currently government relations and advocacy. So before we get to that, you just talked about your service on the board, but let's talk a little bit about how you came into the school counseling profession. I always love hearing people's stories about how they land in this job.
Oh, sure. So since I was 10, I think I've always known I wanted to be a counselor,
10?
Some type of counselor.
Wow.
My mom gave me a psychology book at 10, like a kid's psychology book, and I remember it still. I vividly see it. It's purple, and it says Psychology for Kids.
Wow. When
and
I was 10, I think I wanted to be Nancy Drew, so that's really
right?
good.
I know. Like, who was that? I don't know who I wanted to be. Piaget? I have no idea. But anyway, so I was very into it, and I think it was a deep knowing that I wanted to be in this field. I came to school counseling because I was a teacher out of college, because with a psychology and English degree, that's about all
that's
you can really do.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I did that for a couple years, but really felt pulled to counseling.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt like school counseling would be a perfect marriage of the two because I really like being in schools.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a way for me to be an advocate for kids. And
right.
I feel like deep down, that's really what I am, and probably also why I'm pulled to what I'm doing
right.
on board.
So did you do the old work during the day and go to school at night thing that so many of us did?
I
yes.
sure did.
We, so many of us have done that.
Yep.
And then after you graduated, you jumped into an elementary school counseling position?
Yes, and I did my internship in middle, and I taught middle, so I really thought I was going to be middle. I loved it, but elementary was what was available at the time.
Right.
And I was in Maryland, actually. That was my first counseling job was in Maryland, because I was right around D.C. So I did that. I started in elementary and then have just stayed ever since.
Right, and how long have you been in elementary school counseling?
This is my 13th year.
Wow.
I am.
So at what point did you decide to get involved with VSCA and join the board and start working with groups and teams of people?
So I was pulled in by Tammy Davis, who's at Marymount. She was my advisor when I was
there. She pulls
so
many of us in.
Yeah, doesn't she? I know. She just pulls
us
all in.
She's very good at that.
So she convinced me to check it out. And at the time, the board was still really small, and it wasn't what it is now. We were still part of another parent organization, and it just looked very different. So I tentatively and timidly sort of joined and ran for a position. We were pulling in whoever we could at the time.
Right.
And stayed on ever since.
Right. I think that's the first time I met you is when I first got involved with volunteering a little bit. I met you at a board meeting for the first time. So we have come a long way.
We sure
are
have.
Back doing committees now. So as part of your current role, I'm so excited that you have brought a surprise guest with us today.
Da-da-da.
So not only do you have two counselors on this podcast, you have an amazing surprise guest. So introduce your guest to us.
I would love to. So our guest for today is our amazing and fabulous lobbyist, David Bailey. David Bailey comes from David Bailey and Associates, and his, I guess, co-worker, what would you call Kristen? I don't even know. Co-leader. She is a school counselor in Chesterfield, so we could not have found a more perfect lobbyist and mm-hmm. someone to advocate for us with legislators and in government in general. So, this is David.
Hi, David.
Delighted to be here.
Welcome to the third floor as well.
Glad to be on the third floor, yes.
So, I'm so impressed to be talking to a lobbyist. So, tell us a little bit about how you came to that role and what does that mean? What do you do on a day-to-day basis for BSCA?
As a lobbyist, my primary roles throughout the years, for about 30 years actually, has been working with organizations who really want to do most of their own advocacy mm-hmm. and are interested in doing that, to be the person who helps do steering the ship at times, helping to make the right connections, and working with fantastic colleagues like Brett and mm-hmm. Renee Zando, I think, mm-hmm. was the one who first pulled me in.
Yes.
And working with people who really do such important jobs during the week, and then to help them be better advocates at the state capitol.
Mm-hmm. So on a day-to-day basis, what does that look like? So if someone thinks, oh, that sounds interesting, I'd like to be a lobbyist, how do you get to the point where you do that role?
People come from all different backgrounds. Mm-hmm. There are some that are teachers. There are some that are lawyers. There are some social workers, psychologists. And I think it's a matter of finding, if you have a passion for doing it mm-hmm. and working with legislators. When I think back at some of my first years, there were just some great legislators who took me under their wing, so to speak, mm-hmm. and legislative assistants who said, well, you know, you might want to be doing this or that, whatever it was, and just a learning on the job, mm-hmm. which is, there's not a place where you go get a degree in lobbying.
Right.
But you get the experience, mm-hmm. Really, in doing it.
Right. Well, we're so glad to have you on our team. So we'll talk some more about that in a moment, but I want to talk a little bit about the role of the school counselor in advocacy. It seems like, I said this in the intro, all the other professions in the world, I don't know, just me thinking this, they seem like they can get their degree and just go do their job. But for school counselors, we go to school, we get our degree, and then we have to advocate and work and teach people about what our jobs are. And I know that's a big part of what you all are doing for us at the state level. And then later in the podcast, I want to talk about what we can do at the local and regional levels. But what has happened to us that we have to advocate to do our work? Brett, you've been doing this a little while and you've been working with the SCA. So why is that?
Yeah, I think in terms of our role, if you don't advocate for what you should be doing, you're going to end up doing what you're not supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, in schools, we're always talked to about make sure you're being a team player and everybody pitches in. And that is true. However, there is a limit to that. And it's important that all the people are in the right seats on the bus.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of school counseling, not a lot of people know what that bus looks like.
Right.
So it's important for us to advocate to make clear what our appropriate role is and what we're trained to do. We really are the mental health professionals in the building. And when we are involved in a lot of non-counseling duties, then the counseling duties end up going to other people who are not trained to handle those.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we need to advocate for ourselves as we advocate for kids.
Right. Well, as you use that analogy, I just started thinking, sometimes as a counselor, I felt like I was the one driving the bus, and I wasn't even trained to do that. And then I was also in charge of all the kids on the bus, making sure they all got to the right place and all their needs were met while they were riding along with me. So
true.
You can be so many things just given to you to do that you're not trained to do. I didn't learn it in grad school. I got into a job, and I'm giving responsibilities. And even it didn't matter if I knew how to do that or not. I was mm-hmm. still responsible for making it work. And figuring out how to do it.
Yeah, and we talked about before some things you're given to do that other people can do. Mm-hmm. Other people are able to do those things, such as getting information on people or putting together, we were just talking about putting together holiday lists and baskets. That's all fine. And that's a service to kids. At the same time, what are we uniquely trained to do as counselors that other people are not?
Right.
And then we need to be the ones doing those things.
Right. You know, the other comment I would make is that it's not all that unusual. Practically every profession is involved in advocacy at the state capitol. Now, if you think about medical doctors, they're spending their hundreds of thousands of dollars and hiring a corps of lobbyists, and they don't come down to the Capitol that much. But teachers, social workers, I mean, I was thinking, you know, probably other than people who do shoe shining and is about the only, when you get to that level, who don't really, aren't there doing some, either doing some lobbying, are they paying a core of people? And what I have enjoyed doing over the years is not being the one who does the work for someone, but someone who does the work with, but it works alongside. And that's what happens in quite a few of the other professions as well.
Well, you know, David, that makes me feel a lot better because I felt like we were, you feel alone in the work that I have to advocate and teach people about my job to be able to do it. But you are right. There are so many groups there lobbying to be able to do the work that they feel called to do. So how did, you mentioned Renee Zando Farrell pulling you in to working with VSCA. So tell us how advocacy work began with VSCA with you, David, and what were the beginning seeds of what we were trying to accomplish?
It really was, at the beginning, it was watching legislation, making sure there wasn't something that was going to do harm. And that's part of the advocacy that takes place, is to make sure that there's not something that gets enacted into the code or into regulations that makes your job more difficult. And then it was, as VSCA grew, and then it was looking at saying, well, we need to be proactive in getting some legislation introduced. I mean, the whole ratio issue has been one that's been there all along. But then the matter of the workload, of what you're doing during a working week. And so it as VSCA grew, so did the advocacy grew and expanded.
So what are some changes or progress you have seen over the years? You alluded to a couple of things, but we had a great success this past year. So talk a little bit about that and the role that you played with that.
You know, part of it really started with the school safety study. And during that time, there were fantastic presentations that were made by Brett and by other colleagues who came in and testified before three different subcommittees of that school safety study that the House of Delegates had. And during that process, I think it really opened the eyes of some legislators whose eyes had not been opened about what counselors do. And then for others, like Skylar Van Valkenburg, a teacher who already knew what counselors do, it really empowered them to push, along with the support that came from the governor's office, to say we need to get this ratio to what it should be so that counselors can have more time to spend with children and with youth. You know, we're having the conversation right at the time when there's yet another school shooting that's taking place.
Today.
And just today in California. And I think the concern that that school safety study had really propelled us into the session then of getting the first portion of the loaf to try to get that ratio adjusted to what it should be at a national ratio.
And I think with mental health conversations that we're all having in our localities and the challenges with that, it just brings it again to the forefront, the role of the school counselor plays in the building. And we're trained in that, and let us do our jobs and work with these kids to be able to get them the resources that we need. I remember last spring, the governor came to Hanover County to announce his initiative for $36 million for school counseling. And I went to that event, and one of our school counselors was showcased because she was Teacher of the Year for Hanover County Schools, which is the first time it ever occurred for a school counselor. And I was in tears when he got up to say $36 million. And that was such an exciting day because all the work that had gone into that. And again, after everything was all said and done, we still made progress with $12
million. Right.
And we did make progress with 80-20. So things are starting to happen. I'm just excited to see what happens this year. So the next piece of that is us showing up at Legislative Day. I had not heard of Legislative Day before until a few years ago, and then I started going, and oh my word, it's so exciting. So tell us a little bit about Legislative Day. When is it, and what do counselors need to do to help advocate for our roles?
Sure. So I'll start with when it is, and you would probably be good, David, to talk about what they need to do. So it is January 16th, 2020. It will be at the Capitol, as it has been the last couple of years. And we provide a lot of training and how you can talk to legislators, which is what mostly David and I are here to talk about today, so that counselors can reflect back on this. But it's an exciting day for us to really have the stage with legislators. And last year we came out in force and we made t-shirts, and they were really cool. Black and white t-shirts. The legislators noticed them. They loved them. And on the back of our t-shirts, it said 80-20 and 1 to 250. And that was a really cool talking point with legislators. You know, what does that mean? What's that about? And so we got to talk about that. I think we've hammered home 1 to 250 so much now at this point. They all know what
they
that
all
means.
Know, yes.
But 80-20 ended up getting passed, which is exciting. And we're still working on that. There have been some hiccups with that this year in terms of the language when we passed it. So we are going to put forth an amendment this year to that language.
So what is that change?
So the change would be, instead of saying in the direct counseling of individual students or groups of students, that that's what 80-20 would look like. Instead, the language changes to providing school counseling services to students or on behalf of students.
Wow.
And that's what the 80-20 would look like. And that really aligns more with ASCA and with their intention with direct and indirect services. In terms of legislators, saying direct and indirect is confusing because to them, that means everything.
Right.
To us, that means direct and indirect school counseling services. So when you phrase it as school counseling services, that's a much better way to
convey that message. It can get squishy because people like to make the word say what they want them to say for counselors to do what they do.
So that goes back to advocacy, that we have to advocate for what does school counseling services look like, putting forth the ASCA model. The VDOE just released a really helpful chart and some guidelines about what does 80-20 look like, what are those services. And as school counselors, we've got to advocate for those and put them on our principal's desks and have conversations and stick to them, because yes, it's not just a state thing, it's not just a district thing, it is a building thing. And so we need to advocate within our own buildings.
Right. So how do you, once you got all this done, how do you get amendments done to language?
When the language was proposed by VSEA board, conversation with National, talked to Delegate Skylar Van Valkenburg, Delegate Lamont Bagby, who are key supporters in the House, and they both said, fantastic, that's fine, we'll put that in. So that language will come in probably with both of their names and other people who will sign on to it as well.
So you already have people who have agreed.
Yes.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. Yeah, so
thank you, David, for being there for us.
He's on
that.
Top of it.
Yes.
But back to Legislative Day, and in terms of what counselors can do and how they can advocate with their legislators, the first, as you said, Carla, is to show up. You know, show up.
We need do we just show up, or do we tell somebody we're coming? What is that?
So I will be sending out a Google Doc to all of our members, and probably I will send it out actually to our entire database for Virginia school counselors, every email address that we have. And I'll be asking, you know, are you attending? If you are attending, if you registered beforehand, you get a t-shirt.
I was going to say, so is there a shirt involved
there
again?
There is a shirt involved again.
Because I will do a lot of things for a shirt.
We
do a lot of things for a shirt.
Are you keeping a secret about the message?
No, we're not keeping a secret. We, at conference, we had a shirt that everybody really liked a lot. That had a little heart and said Virginia School Counselors. And people loved it. And it will also say 1 to 250 on the back. Because that
so if we already have the shirt we bought at conference, we can get another one with 1 to 250.
You sure can. And and that shirt was such a hot topic. You could put it on eBay. People would like that.
And then I can wear last year's 1 to 250 shirt. I'll be
there
all set.
There you go. And you'll be set. So that's the first thing. Register. Show up. Even if you don't register, I can't guarantee a shirt, but show up. If all of a sudden on that day your principal says, okay, go, please come. We need Southwest, Western, Central. This is not just about the Richmond area.
Right.
This is about the state.
And I feel
Virginia.
Like a lot of us show up because we live in the Richmond region, but when we're talking about those regions who really need some support, I would love it if they could show up for that day. And even, you know, if they have to, if their principal doesn't want them out, even to consider taking a personal day to come and say, look, this is important to us, and we really want to do their jobs the way we were trained to do.
Just consider it. I know it's a lot to ask. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, this is about our profession and about our future and your own future, you know, in your own buildings. And I will have a hotel block so that people, if they choose to stay, people mm-hmm. can do that. Sometimes counties pay for it. Of course, sometimes they don't. But considering being able to split the room with some colleagues, right. that can be helpful.
Well, I'll just say, walking into that room last year, how many did we have show up last year?
We had over 100.
And seeing everybody in their shirts and putting our game plan together and getting that pep talk before we started out for the day. And David, you came in and talked to us, and you brought some legislators in, and we got photo ops with them. Oh, my word, it was a great day.
Secretary Carney came.
Right, even the very beginning, before we even went out and were able to talk to people, was amazing. It was so inspiring just to be there as a part of it. And then when we made progress, that felt like I had something to do with it.
You did.
Even though I just showed up that one day.
Every person who was there had something to do with it.
So I felt
that's what legislators said. They said, you all are here in force. I see you all everywhere. Mm-hmm. That's why the t-shirts were so effective.
Yeah, it really was, because they saw us in mass walking around with 100 of us in those shirts.
Legislators are so easy to talk with. Mm-hmm. They really are. Anybody who can talk with elementary or secondary or high school students can talk to a legislator. Over the years, I've only known a couple of them that were very shy and, mm-hmm. and stood back. For the most part, they're very outgoing. They want to meet you. And there will be people there who have done this before. Mm-hmm. So if you're coming for the first time, which you will not be, but if someone's coming for the first time, they can go with someone else.
Right, you go in a small group. And, and honestly, when I've gone in, they invite me to sit in their chair and take a picture I'm doing something, making me feel important. You know, and they're asking them for a favor, but they're the ones who are treating me with great respect. So you're in a group of people. You're not by yourself going to see someone. And they really are interested in what we have to say.
And this year, at the time when the new biennial budget will be coming out, a time when there are 23 new legislators, it's just a key time to have conversations with them and with the governor's staff. Mm-hmm. It will be an exciting session.
And you don't have to do a whole lot of studying to mm-hmm. talk to them. It's really not about statistics and facts.
Well, y'all give us a paper that says what we need to talk about with our talking points.
I sure will. There'll be talking points that will go to everybody. But really what they want to hear are your stories. Mm-hmm. They want to hear about the kids that you see. They want to hear about your schools. I mean, they want to know your story. And they take those stories and they repeat them to their mm-hmm. colleagues and to people back in their districts. And we will connect you. We will ask for meetings for people who register.
That's what I was going to ask next. Like, after we get there, when we all are fired up in our shirts, what does that look like? How do we actually get in to see somebody?
Sure. So if you register beforehand, I'll be looking at where everyone is from. Mm-hmm. You can go talk to anybody and impart knowledge and share with anybody, but the legislators get very excited when you're from their district, when you are the ones who have elected
them. Which is why we need people coming from every region.
We do.
So they can talk to their own representatives.
Yeah, they really listen. And David, you can probably speak to that even better than I can.
I tell you, if someone is not sure, who's my delegate, who's my senator, there's a very easy site that's, if you Google, who's my state legislator? It takes you right to that site. Mm-hmm. You put in your address, and then you have the information. And about as much time as I've just said it, mm-hmm. you will know that your delegate and your senator.
Well, I did that last year, and I didn't know some of the names. I mean, I'd seen them, but I didn't know they were my person. So, yes, that was very interesting to find. And then I met them when I went to Legislative Day, not even realizing. I didn't tell them that. But before that day, I didn't realize they were part of my district. But yes, that was an easy way to find it. And I got to speak to three different legislators that are part of my region last year. Very proud of that.
You know, that's the other thing that people can do. They can put in, if you put in the address of the school mm-hmm. where you're working, then it may be different legislators than the ones where you physically live. And so you have double contacts. Mm-hmm. You can say, I'm a school counselor at this school and you're in your district. Oh, yes, I know that where that school mm-hmm. is. And to others, you say, I'm your constituent because I live in your district.
Right. And the other part I liked, too, was some of them wanted, we wanted photos with them. But then they said, can we use your photo to put it in our information? Because they wanted to show, too, that they who they were talking to. And this is opening day, right? So it's their first day.
We actually had to make it later this year just because of how the schedule was. Because mm-hmm. we all go back to school quite a bit later because of how the calendar is. Mm-hmm. So it is later this year than normal. So we are not doing opening day this year. But there are benefits and disadvantages.
Well, they're just getting there opening day, and they're it's like first day of school.
That's exactly what it's like. So and you know how crazy first day of school is. Yes. Right. So a little bit later will be good.
Mm-hmm. So, David, we want to talk a little bit about how a bill becomes a law. I remember I'm just a bill on Capitol Hill. Do you remember that? It's House of Rock. So I know that part from the song, but tell us in language of that we can relate to other than, unless you want to sing the song. Do you remember that?
No, I would love for you to sing the song. I'll join in with you. Thank you.
So tell us about the process and what are some things that we might not understand about the process or common misunderstandings about
it. I think a common misunderstanding at times is if a bill passes out of the Senate, then sometimes people say, well, that's it. But a bill has to pass in both chambers.
That's in the song.
In the same language. And if the second chamber makes some changes in it, just even slight ones, it has to go back to the first chamber to be approved. And so there can be a whole lot of back and forth. The other part, and I can't remember if this is in the song or not, but some of the most important part of what takes place is in the subcommittees or the committees. Now, some of you may be as fortunate as Brett, who can bring a daughter with her to when she speaks before a committee.
Shamelessly brought my 5-year-old.
That was a hit with the legislators. But even if you don't have a daughter or a son, you can bring with you. In those subcommittees, you have an opportunity to speak, and that's an important part of the process. Some of that could take place on the lobby day, since it will be day 8 of the session. But I think the main thing to know is that it's an orderly process of bills going through both chambers, then going to the governor, and then the governor may send amendments back. Is that in the song too?
I think it does. It can even get vetoed.
It's a good song.
But other than veto, the governor may say, well, I want to make this amendment. And so it goes back on the reconvene day. So it's, I think the, if I go back and underscore the tendency that many would have, not school counselors alone, but many people would have, if something passes one chamber, they say, oh, it's done. But it's not. It's just remember, it's going to continue throughout this year, the 60 days.
So what does it look like? Can we track that? Like once it goes through the committee, how do we track that? Once we show up for legislative day, and I remember a couple of years ago there was some language and they called us a guidance counselor and we had to go back to a committee and say, take that word out, please.
Well, that was another school counselors. Success from
and
last year.
We've changed that. That's actually now
that's
in the language.
It's in the language. So that was one I remember going back because they called us guidance counselors in the language. So how do we follow once we show up for legislative day and it starts making progress? How do we look to see what's happening with things we've worked on?
There will be a bill tracking of all the bills for VSCA. And that's accessible to everyone where they could be able to see that. But beyond that, if there's one bill that people get interested in, there's a way, and we can give that link on Lobby Day. There's a link where they can follow that one bill on their own and get alerts.
I think it would be great to do because you can feel like you're part of it after you leave the day and see where we are. We don't have to wait for the big announcement then. We can kind of see where it is.
And I will say some of the bill tracking stuff is pretty overwhelming, I'll be honest. And so one thing we try to do with VSCA, especially during session, when they're in session, the General Assembly's in session, we send out some of the big messages, you know, the email messages. This bill is coming up. Call your legislators. So when you see that, know that that has a time limit on it. You know that it's really important if that's coming out. If we're choosing to send that out, this is really something that's going to affect us. And our members were amazing last year at doing that. And that is a
that's
huge
how
reason
we got where we are.
Huge reason why a lot of this got passed. And Mike Mullen came, who's out of Virginia Beach, and he came and spoke to us at our conference. And he said something, or maybe David, you said something about, you know, oh, and counselors came and they advocated and they talked to their legislators. And I heard him say, and that works.
Yes.
I heard him say that.
Wow.
So, and you said, and they called and they emailed and he said, and that worked.
Wow. And I think
so
that's
that
so
matters.
Important.
It matters. It matters when you call. It matters when you email. They do say calling is more, I don't want to say forceful, more effective possibly than email. So call if you can, but show up, call, email, whatever you can do.
And when you think of just one voice, what can I do? I don't want to take the few minutes to do that. It matters.
It matters.
It really does. Because your voice does count.
It really does. Sometimes people think about a national level where if somebody you're advocating something in Washington, there are going to be thousands of people. In Virginia, on issues, if there are 100 people who are advocating on it, who are, I don't mean paid lobbyists, mm-hmm. I mean real people out in the field, then that 100 is a significant number.
Right. And we have, almost 1,700 members now?
We do, almost 17. And we have 4,000 registered school counselors
in the state. Right, and 1,700 members. So mm-hmm. even if...
We're in force.
That's right.
We are a force.
We're in force.
And we join together and we are working together as a group now to advocate. I'm getting all fired up about this.
I know, right? I'm ready for legislative time. Yeah. Let's go. Yeah.
So when is the best time we can talk to legislators? Should we wait till legislative day when things start rolling? Or is there something we should do before?
Best time would be from the time they hear your message tonight from the third floor, mm-hmm. before the holidays, maybe before Thanksgiving, but if not, certainly before school's out in December, send an email mm-hmm. to the person who's your legislator and say, I look forward to working with you. And if you're coming to lobby day, say, I hope to see you on the 16th when I come. I think that if we wait to make the first contact after a bill has gotten into trouble and difficulty, mm-hmm. then it's a challenge. So I think to be proactive and to make contacts early.
And especially if someone just got elected, welcome them.
That's right.
And say, hi, here That's I am, right. and this is what we're advocating.
Yeah. That's why we need 1 to 250. Mm-hmm.
And in one sense of the word, it's a fact, every one of the 140 just got elected.
Mm-hmm.
23 of them for the first time. But the other 117 were reelected for terms. So congratulations on your reelection or on mm-hmm. your first election, or if you aren't sure which it is, just congratulations on your election.
Yes.
And there were quite a few very, very close races. Mm-hmm. So they especially are listening.
Right. That's good stuff. So when we're talking to them, is there any type of language that we should use when speaking to them, or specific terms or points that we should hit upon?
I don't think you need to worry about any specific language. As Brett said earlier, they're going to be asking you, what are your experiences, or tell us your story, and just be yourself.
Mm-hmm. And be passionate, which we are. We're very passionate. We are passionate professionals.
Right.
We are. And I think they see that when we show up and we talk and we tell stories about our kids. They really do.
We are passionate. I think we do sometimes worry about tuning our own horns and what are we going to sound like, and I can't go and advocate for myself, but mm-hmm. you advocate for kids every day. That's what we do.
And I tell that to counselors all the time, even in their own buildings, and I'll say, you need to do a flashlight presentation and show the faculty, and they say those things, and I said, you're advocating for the kids, you're not advocating yourself. If you aren't advocating, you can't do the work. So it's for those kids in the state of Virginia that we do the work. It's not for ourselves, ever.
That's right.
It's
you're always advocating for your profession. Mm-hmm. That's what you're doing.
And there will be legislators who want to tell you their story, too. And if I summed it up very quickly, Delegate Dolores McQuinn mm-hmm. will tell you the story of what her school counselor in high school meant to her. I'm not sure. 30, 40 years ago that she was in high school, I'm not sure. And every year... Get this, every year when some of them get together, the school counselor comes and meets with them, that person who's mm-hmm. retired.
Oh, wow.
But she met, and others, they have their story, their mm-hmm. positive, overwhelming stories about their experience with school
That's
counselors.
So true.
And if you are negative, but then you also say, oh, well, here's how we've changed.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, the profession has evolved so much. Let me tell you about it.
I just remember 2 years ago, I met Mayor Stoney for the first time, and mm-hmm. I introduced myself, and he told me the story about his high school counselor and how she helped him get to where he is right now. Mm. I love that when they share their stories too.
Yes.
So what are some of BSCA's talking points now, and how can we find them and start that conversation among all of us?
Yeah, so after this today, I'm going to take our legislative points and post them on our website to mm-hmm. make sure that everybody has access to them. They do evolve frequently as things happen, especially when the General Assembly reconvenes.
Mm-hmm.
Things happen quickly, and so sometimes our talking points change because of that. We want to advocate for this bill, or we want to change this language, or that mm-hmm. kind of thing. So as of right now, we're looking at further reducing ratios, and this will be in incremental parts, and David can speak to that a bit as well. So we're looking at sort of the next increment to reduce our ratios in Virginia. We're also looking at amending the language of the current statute that we passed, 1729, the 80-20 legislation. So those are our two big things right now, looking at further reducing ratios and looking at amending that language and supporting both of those points.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And we'll, and as Brett said, we'll continue talking the 1 to 250. And if it takes two steps to get there, then we'll work with them over two steps. But we will be advocating the main step that needs to be taken.
Every little bit helps us. Every little bit does. Mm-hmm. I remember last year, as we started through the process, and you were talking about going before subcommittees. So for some of us, we're like, oh, that's terrifying. But there may be some people who are willing to do that. What would that look like if, as we get to points and you need people for subcommittees, if someone's interested in doing that?
Sure.
How would they access that?
So the first people I reach out to tend to be my committee. So if you have an interest in this, no matter where you are in Virginia, I would love for you to be on our legislative committee.
How many people do you have on there?
Right now I have about 15. And our big push is Legislative Day. But other than that, besides organizing that, it's really about when General Assembly is in session to be able to show up, but also call, rally the troops in your area. To respond, to call, to email, to that kind of thing. If you can come, great. It's hard because a lot of times we have very short notice on when they meet and what they need, but my committee has been wonderful and we're always adding more people. And really, there's no limit to that committee because it's an email sent out to everybody who can come.
Right.
So the more people I have, the more chance that somebody's going to be available to come. And you navigate your way to the Capitol, which can be a challenge because parking alone is a challenge, figuring that out, and the building's a bit of a challenge. But we just meet in the lobby, and then we figure out where to go. You know, sometimes you're talking to five people. Sometimes you're talking to 12. There are always other people there who are also talking. And you'd think it's this huge, scary thing, but it's like a conference room. I mean, it's a small room. They don't tend to be
big. So when you think about it, you think, oh, no, it's the government.
Oh, my gosh, I'm going to this big thing. You're really not. You show up, and it's like a little conference room. So you do that, and again, you're talking, you're sharing, and if they're nervous, I will be happy to write up something for them to say. I try to go as much as I can, but it's far more powerful if you share your own story.
All right. Thank you. So we have talked about the big picture of advocacy. So let's talk about more at the local level and then even drilling down to what counselors can do within their own buildings. With these things as they're passing, and we got 80-20, we got the language change to school counselor, working on 1 to 250. How can that counselor, maybe who's alone in a building in a school district who doesn't really have support, how can they advocate for their role? What are some tips you have for them?
So I would say taking that guidance from the DOE that they provided, that chart, and making sure that that's gone to their principal and that their administration sees that so that they understand the appropriate role of the school counselor. So not only now do we have ASCA to back things up, but, you know, there really was no mandate from ASCA. Now that we have 80-20, that's why it's powerful, because it's in the law to be spending 80% of our time in counseling services. And we're going to try to change it to school counseling services. Right now it says direct. So making sure they're aware of that, number one, and then talking about what that looks like. And that can be a negotiating point, and I understand not all principals are going to be on board with that. And like you said, Carla, they may try to wiggle some things in there. Oh, that's a school counseling service. Well, not really. But I always try to say, close a door, open a window. Yeah. You know, well, I can't do that, and this is the reason why, because I wouldn't be serving kids. But here's what I could do. I see that we need this. The data is showing us that our kids need this.
Right.
And so find a way to put that in there so that it's clear that you're still working for kids. You're not just saying no.
So one thing that I found very powerful is those annual administrator conference forms, putting together what your program goals are, helping the principal see your tying your goals into the school improvement goals, which they have to be accredited. So you are helping them get accreditation by the small groups you're running, the classroom instruction lessons, helping them to see that through the data you're collecting. And another piece is collecting data on things that they're asking you to do that aren't counselor related. Some things that we're really working on, counselors are being pulled from classroom lessons or small groups to monitor behaviorally challenging students who take up a good bit of time. So I've asked them to start documenting how much time a week are you being pulled from your school counseling duties to watch one child who's having behavioral issues. So again, yes, we collaborate, we are a team player, but if you're not serving all the kids in your building because you're serving two kids in your building, that's also not our role.
Right.
So the way to do it is say, here, I spent 4 hours this week with this one child. Is that equity? So I know we say a lot, collect data, but that's what data can do. It's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
It's very powerful.
And there's some easy ways to collect that data. I mean, you can do something as easy as create a Google form, and every day you can go on. If you know there's this one kid, you log how many hours you spent with that kid. And if you do it on Google at the end, you can get a pretty little graph.
Exactly.
You know? And it's really not, it's not a huge challenge to collect that data if you do that.
So thinking about in your own building, like what are things you're getting pulled to do? If you have all the 504s in your building, and how much time are you doing that? Doing the paperwork for 504s, thinking about time and documenting it and then presenting that. And again, because we have a bill to back us up now, the 80-20, is that really what we're supposed to be doing?
Right.
So this is, we've covered a lot of information today,
sure,
but I think
it's
exciting for school counselors to hear all this. So for both of you, I would like to hear in this part of your role, what are you most proud of and what we've accomplished with advocacy and BSCA?
For me? Okay. I would say I am most proud of 80-20 right now.
Mm-hmm.
I know we have to amend that language because I'm worried it's getting also subverted a bit about looping counselors into resource schedules and other things. And so we're working really hard to make sure that does not happen. But I'm proud of it because I think it's a step closer to what we're supposed to be doing. It's something that a lot of other state associations have contacted us about. How did you do that? Like, how did you get this? And it's really about school counselors in Virginia being passionate and advocating for themselves and talking to the legislators. That's the answer. That's how we did it. It's people standing up and saying, you know, no more. And it's why teachers are striking. And it's this movement in education of this is not okay anymore. Kids deserve better than this.
And I'm proud of us. Virginia has done so much work. And as you said, other states are contacting us. We were at ASCA this summer and at the RAMP Awards. Virginia had the most RAMP schools there of any state. I was so proud that night. They took a great group photo of all of us who were there attending, who had RAMP schools, and I was just so proud to be a part of the state of Virginia because our board has done a lot of work around this. And David, I will say a lot of this is in part to you being our voice as our lobbyist. So, and all the work that you've done for us, and again, it's not overnight. This has been going on for a while,
but
we're finally seeing it come to fruition. So, what is your most proud moment in being our lobbyist?
I think it really was during the school safety study and being able to open the doors. All I did was contact Delegate Steve Landis and Delegate Chris Peace and contact them about their subcommittees and former speaker, soon to be former speaker, Kirk Cox, and to say, we need to have people come in and testify before the subcommittees. And then it happened, and it was fantastic dialogue back and forth and presentations that were made. And I think what happened in that summer is something that I'm most proud of because it was counselors taking time in the summertime of their own time and coming to the Capitol and spending hours and probably some of the time they travel, whether it was from Charlottesville or whatever distance they travel or from Norfolk, end up spending a better part of a day. And then people listened, and they would listen. So when I can open the door and there are people like the two of you and others who are ready and willing to move inside and start speaking, that's the part that thrills me the most.
Wow. Well, thank you for the work. I'm so excited to talk about this topic today because it's very timely. The elections have just occurred.
Right.
We need to strike while the iron is hot.
That's
They've
right.
just been elected. We get in there and congratulate them, say we're here, and then we show up January 16th.
Absolutely.
Legislative day.
Morning of January 16th.
At the Capitol in Richmond. And Brett will be sending out information about that, so be on the lookout, checking your email from BSCA. And I'm excited to see how many we have show up. And have we said you get a free shirt if you show up this year?
We might have mentioned that.
So the shirt that we all wanted at conference will be available if you show up and you sign up in advance.
Correct, and you sign up
in
advance.
So I end every podcast with two questions. I think self-care is so important in this profession. So personally, what do you do for self-care? And also as a part of learning and growing, what are you currently reading to keep you fresh in the profession? So, David, we'll start with you.
And my most recent reading came from an article that was published in our magazine, Virginia Capital Connections. I said, I got to read that book. It's entitled Jefferson's Godfather, The Man Behind the Man. And it's a phenomenal story about George Wythe, who doesn't get as much attention around the state capitol. It's a bust of him in one spot that's not all that prominent, but a phenomenal person who did so much in the early part of our history. And I love reading history, so that's been my most recent reading.
Good. So what do you do to keep yourself in a good space?
Well, as often as possible to get to the Y, and if not, to get out and walk. And so this is, we're having a conversation on Thursday, and on Saturday in the cold, blustery weather, I'll be walking with my two daughters in the 8K.
Well, good for you.
And we've done that for quite a few years.
Good.
And each year, we've improved our time.
Good. Love that. What about you, Brett? What are you currently reading?
So I tend to read two books at once. I don't know why I do that. I just do. I always have. I don't know.
You're so used to multitasking.
Maybe that's why. Right. Maybe that's why. Mom brain. I don't know. So I am reading Untangled right now by Lisa D'Amour. And it's about teenage girls and how to handle them. My daughter's only seven, but I'm
you're
trying to prepare
ready.
Myself because I'm
proactive.
I can already see what it's going to be like. And I am also rereading The Body Keeps the Score.
Tell us about that.
That is a book about trauma, and it was written by a psychiatrist years ago. I don't even know when the published date was, and he started in the 70s, but he was really one of the pioneers of putting the diagnosis of PTSD on the map and understanding that not only in veterans, but in people in general, and the role trauma plays in mental health.
Wow, and that's so relevant to what we do in our work.
It's an amazing book, so if you haven't read it, I highly recommend it. And then self-care, I do a couple of things. Zumba is incredibly, beautiful for me. I love it. I love the dancing, and it's my once a weekend time for myself. And I am an introvert by nature, even though I sort of...
Really?
Yeah, and a lot of people say, I can't believe that, but I was a very shy little girl, and I'm just an introvert by nature, so being by myself is what I really need. So whether it's working out, walking in my neighborhood, or going to Starbucks by myself without my children.
Definitely.
Right.
Well, I can't thank you all enough for coming to the third floor today to talk about how we can advocate for our professions. And I'm excited to hear all that has been accomplished and what we will accomplish in this next legislative session. So hope to see you all January 16th. Hopefully the weather's good, but if not, we'll show up anyway for our free shirts.
Be there, be square.
All right.
We got hotel rooms. So
thank you, Brett and David.
Thank you, Carla.
Too.